Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and tonight we are doing a special show with co-hosts Yvonne Smith and Celia Brown on surviving race and responding to the aftermath of police brutality. I think it's incredibly important that we call attention to and stand against the police killings of individuals in Baton Rouge, Minnesota, New York, and all over the place of people who are African American and Latino and or who have perceived disabilities. I want to immediately bring in Yvonne. Yvonne, are you online?
Yes, I am online, and this is something that's been going on for a long time, just that people have cell phones now. That's the big difference, and people in our disability community, people with mental health issues or either perceived mental health issues. In fact, of those people that are killed by the police, over half of them are people that are labeled with psychiatric disabilities, or at least soon after the person is dead, they try to associate them with having a mental illness. So this is something that's been going on a long time. I'm glad that Celia Brown is here. She's president of Mind Freedom.
I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Hi.
Okay, I didn't know you just started.
Great.
Okay, I was
Sorry.
Texting you, Lauren.
Sorry,
okay.
Yeah. So I think with both Yvonne and Celia here tonight, I just want to let people know that this is an open lines call-in show. And so if people would like to call in and get involved in the discussion, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167. If you grab a pen, I also have a toll-free line for tonight if you can't, for whatever reason, make a long-distance call. The toll-free number in the United States is area code 855-346-3351. That's 855-346-3351. And our regular call-in line is area code 267-521-0167. I just would like to ask if you have background noise or if you're on a speakerphone, if you can either mute, keep yourself mute unless you're talking, or because I am getting a lot of feedback in the background. And I'd like to welcome all of the people who are listening in. And so, Yvonne and Celia, I'd like to ask you to take over from here.
Okay, thank you, Lauren, so much.
Thank you.
Yvonne, did you want to start? You were
talking
about something.
I had already sort of started to set the background, because there's a certain amount of commonality that is involved here, and it's something that many people, I know that Celia has been involved in this in a national way. This has been going on for quite some time, and only because there's now film available. In the Baton Rouge case and the case in Minnesota, there's film. In the case of Natasha McKinney and Mariah Carey in Washington, there was film, and there's a lot of film now. I don't know what is happening, why, as when they have these instances, the police get off, and we know that just because these people had cell phones available, everybody does not have film available for this, and it is quite common. And I hope that people will call in with their stories or how this is handled in their community.
I mean, I think we're in an era where we have Facebook, social media, we have smartphones, we can film you know, videotape some of the things that are happening. And I agree with you, Yvonne. This wasn't really televised for a long time. It happens in our community, but it's not, it's rarely discussed unless it gets to the, you know, 7 o'clock, 11 o'clock news. Then people will know. So in a way, I'm happy that it's being exposed, all of these police shootings and killings. But it still doesn't, we're not getting justice for any of this. You know, it's like the lives of the black women that you mentioned and black men, in some way, it's their fault. Like Natasha, she had bipolar schizophrenia, so is that a reason to kill her? That makes no sense. That her it's more to that, but I read the article that you sent me, Yvonne, and they put in, she was bipolar schizophrenia. And, you know, and in some way it justifies the police to say, well, we'll just shock her, you know, tie her to, you know, to the cell, you know.
I didn't want to send you the film if you hadn't seen it, but
I didn't want to see the film.
If you guys, if anybody wants to, they go to Natasha McKinney. Actually, she was in jail actually when this happened.
Yeah,
She was under custody. She was naked in her room. She had taken all her clothes off, and they had told her to come out. And on the film, which is just brings chills up and down my spine, she says, and they grabbed. She says, "You told me if I came out, you wouldn't kill me." I mean, those were her words. And four people jumped on her while she was naked. Put her in a chair in restraint, and they shocked her, and she passed away.
Right.
And they acted as if.
Right.
As if.
So
she
what
was,
I'm saying is, you know, I'm trying to heal and try to understand this, but it was no reason for them to jump on her. Jump on her for what? I mean, was she dangerous to them? I mean. A lot of these cases, the police are saying, well, we thought the person had a gun or they, you know, the knife they were plunging at me. Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about that is Jordan Davis's father told me this when I was in Geneva. He said that there's castle law. And what happens is if they say, I believe my life is in danger, that basically that is it. And for the police, if they follow police procedure, usually the thing about when I say there's no justice, like you said, there's no justice, because usually people don't get to a trial unless there is film or marches, because what they'll do, they have some kind of internal review board, and the review board will say that they acted within the perimeters of their training. And that's why I say that for this, we have to work together on changing laws, processes, and procedures, you know, because they do have they have a review process that's internal. You know, it's like they say, it's like the, you know, they have an internal review process, and it's very rare that they're charged, and that's why people are upset. You know,
well,
and
the internal process doesn't make any sense. How do you police yourself? It has to be external.
Mm-hmm. I agree
and,
with
you. Know,
if I could jump in for a second, the Esmond Green's murder in Brooklyn, Kings County, that rose many of us up and really, I think, reestablished our movement. That was another moment in time of where her death was captured on video. We would have never known that if that hadn't happened.
Yeah.
And it was the police report, the NYPD's report, said that they couldn't do an investigation in the institution, that they didn't have the power to investigate what was happening inside the institution. And I think that that's another issue of just to have in the background.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I guess what there's so many different levels of how this is really corruption that we're talking about. You know, you cannot police yourself, okay? And what bothers me a lot is that it seems that people are calling the police for everything. You know, oh, I have a crisis. Who says the police can handle all crisis that comes up? If you're calling them because someone, you know, is having emotional challenges, you know, maybe seeing visions, hearing voices, that person needs support. They don't need for you to come. If the mother is calling or the father is calling, oh, I need help with my child, and you're coming in, and then you see what's going on, and then reaction is, let me shoot the person.
Well, let's back up a little bit, because when they have cases like that, they could be calling for that or either for a wellness check. The mental health authorities are partly to blame, because when people, I don't know about other places, but when you call an agency here in Washington, D.C., you know, they're supposed to have 24-hour service. But that doesn't mean somebody will come 24 hours. You'll hear a recording that says, if this is an emergency, call 911.
Right.
And then when you get the police dispatch, and I've asked and got expanded stories on these before, when you call the police, the dispatcher, they will carefully ask the questions. And the questions they ask are really, is the person, you know, is the person, you know, like, danger to self or others? You know, what did they do? What's happening? So the dispatcher, you know, tells that to the on-call officer. So when they come out, they're already for the ready. And they use legal force, and they don't take one shot. They take multiple shots. I remember one case that Lauren Tenney had looked into was in Texas, where the man had a little knife. His family had called.
There actually was no knife that was ever found.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
They claimed
Michael
was
Blair.
Knife,
Michael Blair in Fort Bend, Texas, and brutally shot. 11 shots fired in his bathroom. 26-year-old.
He was on the floor. He was on the floor after the second shot. So
they broke
no
the taser on him. It's horrendous what happened to this young man. And
the my question is, why shoot 11 times? Does that make any sense? You know, if you want to, you know, stop the person, you shoot him in the leg or the arm. I mean, why do 11 shots? I don't get it.
It goes back to the training, and I would hope if some this was widely distributed. I hope if some police officers or DA people are, I hope that they would press *1 or 1 so they could come in. But it goes back to their training. When they have training for shooting, it's like they're in an urban warfare. You know, there are people coming out from behind cars and things like that, and it's like target practice. So they're already kind of, I don't know how to say it, they're kind of geared up for that. I mean, look at the case of Philando Castile. He was in a vehicle. I mean,
right.
You know, and he was in a vehicle with his girlfriend and a 4-year-old daughter, and he was shot 4 times, and still, after the 4th time, the officer still did not put his gun down. And I wonder if
that's a problem.
Yeah, it goes back to the training. And if they follow the training, usually when there's a panel, either there's a court case or whatever, they usually are exonerated because they have followed what they have been taught to do. And that's the thing. And then when they go to court, there's another thing that's involved. The police and the district attorneys, they work together. I mean, it's like, for example, if we had a basketball game and it's Yvonne's team and Celia's team, and we said, oh, the referee can't come, and Yvonne, you can ref the game tonight. But after the game, I still got to go back to my team. So I think that we should talk about solutions, too. I think in some of these cases, because they work so closely together,
I think we need to talk about all of it. But, you know, where I'm at now, and I'm into what to do about it, is, you know, just the violence, senseless violence. You can take away, the police can take away your life and basically get away with it. And the culture of the district attorney and the grand jury, they're all working together to protect the police. They're not protecting the
Absolutely.
Person that got killed.
Absolutely.
That's a problem. And I know we need to, you know, talk about what solutions. I definitely think we need to do that, but... You know, there's a culture, even, you know, the mayor, de Blasio, in New York, you know, the police turned against him. You remember that?
Yeah.
And why does the police have all this power and authority? Why?
Because they're called peace officers. I'm not agreeing with it, but I'm trying to answer the question. Because they're called peace officers. Like, COP stands for Constable on Patrol. So, for example, there are things that happen that's a change in culture. There's a change in culture in when police officers, in a lot of jurisdictions, if a police officer commands you to stop, or you, it's like resistance. So, you know, for example, in the I don't think it's right that it happened, but I've seen it on film many times.
Yeah.
And they've been getting against a person, and they're not really doing anything, just trying to get away. And so these people that are involved in the shootings, I was told this a couple of nights ago. We had a panel with our Attorney General, Carl Racine, had a panel with people who talked about juvenile justice. And people from Child and Youth Services said this generation is different. If a police officer tells them that they're, you know, to come over here, you know, they will walk away because they don't think they have to come. I haven't done anything wrong. And so, or same thing in a vehicle. They are already primed. It's not right, but they're already primed that you have to immediately obey. So you shouldn't be calling family members. I would suggest if they want their relatives to die, call the police. But if a person is really emotionally stressed, and they don't even have to be emotionally stressed, they will not be able to respond in a quick enough time. You know, it's like when your mother said, come here, and you didn't, and you were slow about coming, and she yanked you. She was really priming you because she knew that there's bad people out here, and when they say, come or to go, you have to do it. And, so people don't respond, and as long as they say is that he resisted. I mean, look at Alton Sterling, who was in Baton Rouge. I don't care what he was doing, whether he was selling CDs or whatever else, he still doesn't deserve to die. In fact, the owner of that convenience store, he was the one that taped it.
Yeah.
But he was down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a legal permit too, but he didn't pull a gun out. He had, it was two officers over him. You know, it was an execution.
And see, you can't blame the person. Well, what happens after you shoot them? Oh, well, they were selling, you know, illegal cigarettes or whatever. Really? I mean, that's not a reason to kill someone or make an excuse. Oh, they have a quote mental illness, so they're justifying killing someone. That's not right, and it's not justice.
Definitely not. Even if you're doing something that's wrong, I think the police should have a duty to try to not use force. In Dallas, which, you know, my heart goes out to the to the officers that were slaughtered there, you know, regardless of how angry you
are.
Yeah,
I feel that way, too. It's not like I don't feel that way. I'm just saying that the police have so much power that they can get away with this, and they do this every... I mean, this is happening more often, you know, we're seeing it, and they're getting away with it.
Well, they've been getting away with it for decades. You know, this is nothing. This is just an extension of the... This is the early 20th century and 1890s lynching. This is what happened. I mean, in Dallas, for example, where, you know, everybody can say, you know, it's horrible that those five officers were killed. They made a decision, a systematic decision, to send in a robot. Now, they could have sent a robot in with, what, tear gas or anything else, but they sent in a robot to extinguish it.
And
so,
why doesn't the police department just have around a robot with a bomb ready to go?
Right. Right.
And I apologize for saying this, but my firm belief is that if it was a white male that they were going after, that would have never happened.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Right.
And the robot, it has a lot of implications. It's very scary. I mean, this is like, I feel like we're in, you know, like a war zone and, you know, military, all this gear. I mean, really? I have never seen this in my lifetime. I know it's happened before, but it's very scary.
The federal government has given them these things. This is what one of the things that came out of the... shooting in Missouri, that, you know, a lot of police forces now have been militarized. And because there are other opportunities that people have, many of the police officers now, they hire their former military, you know, fresh off of 3 or 4 tours in Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that. You know, you realize we have an army now and a Marine Corps force. Some of the people I work with have hit 7 to 8 deployments. In fact, the young man who was the shooter, he had tried to get on the police force. So you've got a lot of people that have military experience. The training that they have is about shooting accuracy. They are not trained in de-escalation processes or anything like that, and then they're being called to do a lot of things that I don't know what they do in New York, but you know they're asked to do things that don't have nothing to do with police work.
Lauren, do we have a call?
We do. We have a call that I'm bringing in right now. Your line is open. You're live on the air. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi. You're live on the air.
Did you call in 617?
What's that? Yes.
Did you bring in 617?
Yep.
You can hear me. I am. Okay. This is Julie. Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you? This is such a terrific topic. I'm so glad that I'm glad you tweeted about this. I just happened to show up in my email. I'm not on Twitter, but I happened to see this in my email. I'm glad to be able to hear the show. It's terrible, these things that are happening. I personally don't think we really need cameras. We have human memory. We have human eyes, ears. We can tell stories, right? And we can write them down. When I was 10 years old, we didn't have social media, but I'm telling you, we had radio. Every single kid was singing that Neil Young song, "For Dead" in Ohio. And it was repeated in that that slogan, "War Dead" in Ohio, it stuck like a dagger in your heart. 10 years later, we were still singing that song. 10 years later, we were still singing it, right along with the Pete Seeger song. We got our memories. We got our conviction to...
I'm getting a tremendous amount of feedback.
I don't know why. I hear it, but I don't have anything on.
Somebody has a speakerphone on or computer speakers on, if you can lower that down.
One of the reasons why we need camera is because our voices are not necessarily believed. And many of the jurisdictions now are going towards where they have cameras, because I don't know, in the case of Philander Castillo, I don't know if there wasn't a Facebook live feed. Now, wasn't recorded, a live feed. I like to think the police wouldn't do it, but there were two other people in that vehicle. They all could be.
I suppose they think the people now may have lied, but I don't care if they're
being fully charged, because we do still need to call attention to these things. But the fact that people have body cameras and things like that, this guy, there's going to be some kind of review of both of these cases. If there was no film, we wouldn't even know about it.
But I want to respond to the caller.
Wait.
Let me respond to the caller, and I want to hear. You know, I appreciate what you said about telling stories, and this is what we had during slavery. There was no social media or cameras or anything. The stories were told from generation to generation. But I think now we're in a different time, and it's different. So we can tell the stories, we can still do that, but this has to be documented, because then nothing will happen, you know? That's just is my opinion.
Thank you. I also think that as people see the brutality, it becomes much more real for people. I had overheard someone remarking at the D Voice defense, Celia, that there's no way I would have ever been able to do that without the video. To say those things, that I would have never been able to make those arguments that without the video. And that was just video of people talking about it. So when people actually see the brutality and can envision themselves in the midst of it, I think it hopefully will end this, because it has been going on for centuries. This is nothing new. And the stories, if people have them, I just want to jump in again with the phone number. Area code 267-521-0167. Julie, I just put you on, I took you off live because I was getting a lot of background noise, but if you want to jump back in, I'll open up your line in a second to respond. I just want to again give the 800 number. It's an 855 number, but if you have no long distance and need to and want to participate in the conversation, it's area code 855-346-3351. That's a toll-free line, 855-346-3351. And Julie, I'm just opening up your line again. If you'd like to respond back and just give any thoughts as we move into, and Yvonne and Celia, if you want to continue from there.
Okay. Thank you, Lauren.
So, Julie, hopefully you'll call back. It looks like when I tried to open up your line that it disconnected, so I apologize for that. But hopefully you'll be able to call back on a better line. So, Yvonne,
do we have any other callers, Lauren?
There are people who are listening. I want to remind you to press 1 or star 1 if you want to jump into the conversation. Even if you've done it, do it again. Sometimes the Blog Talk Radio function studio here isn't that great. And depending on where you're calling from will depend on whether it's a 1 or a star 1. But, yeah, there are people calling in from Skype. There are people calling in from various parts of the country. Let me
okay.
see.
There's
it
a lot of
like
people.
It does look like... No. Okay. So people are definitely listening. So yeah, I think continuing to talk is important.
Okay. Where were we?
Robots. Never been before.
Oh, robots.
Slavery, that this has been going on.
Yeah, and the gentleman in Dallas who had an automatic weapon. I want to say something about the robot, but I always want to say, after he's deceased, now they talk about him being delusional. You know,
right.
This is always after the fact that the person is deceased, the person is delusional. And they sent in a little robot with a bomb on it. And, I mean, they could have sent in tear gas or any other thing, but they sent in a bomb to annihilate him. And, of course, immediately after the event, there are all kinds of things now being said about him. You know, he's ex-military and...
Well, this is just wrong. See, the media and, you know, they're justifying doing this. This is, wasn't right of them to have a robot go in. They're justifying their violence against this man. And they're going to do it to other people. This is probably going to be like a new thing that the police are going to be using. And we'll just send in a robot. And then say the person was delusional, and they're getting away with saying that. You know, that doesn't justify you having a robot or killing someone 11 times. It's just we have to, that argument has to change. They can't just say that.
Well, one of the things about the argument is because people do things that we don't think is rational, does not mean that they're delusional.
Right.
You know, they very well may be very angry and know exactly what they're doing. That does not excuse anything. But conversely, some people use things like that to say that people who have mental health challenges, that's why we want to have all this involuntary force that is of using the medical psychiatric system. Because we're trying to prevent those rare cases that occur where somebody is involved in violence and there's no predictor of that.
But they can't predict it. And just saying, you know, let's lock up the few people that do such a crime, it's not going to change. It's not going to make it better at all. It's just a Band-Aid for them. Or damage control, it doesn't solve any of the social problems. It doesn't.
Well, we should talk about social problems too, but I want to go a little further than that. They want to use things like the Murphy bill and the Alexander bill. They want to use it to preempt. In other words, preemptive. There's a lot of what they call primordial things. They want to preempt. They want to be able to catch these things when the person is young or when, and as you said, there's no predictor. We want to make sure that we force the person to be traumatized by something so that we can prevent them from maybe, you know, of all the hundreds of thousands of people that supposedly have a label and it's very rare that...
Well, this is damaging to the person receiving the coercion or the forced treatment. And in years, and we've heard this over the years, people are afraid to go in the mental health system. They don't want to be re-traumatized at all. And the shootings are going to cause another trauma. It's already causing trauma. It's also intergenerational. I mean, I talk to my mom a lot, and she tells me things in the civil rights movement when she lived in the South as if it happened yesterday. This is, like, it very difficult to move on from this. How do you move on when you don't see any justice? You're going through so much trauma, you know, and then that may be, hopefully that doesn't come a mental health issue, but it might.
Yeah, well,
so,
they say, in,
you know,
they say that people that really, that, you know, depending on who you talk to, you know, some people say 75% of all the things that we call a mental illness is caused by some real physical problem, and then the rest are people that have trauma. I just can't imagine that little four-year-old baby, and I couldn't play it back another time, but she said, "Mommy, I'm right here." You know, to be in a place where you're 4 years old and you're comforting your mother. And the person still has a gun. And the person still has the gun pointing. The person has, you know, but she says, "I can't believe, don't tell me he just died here." And you didn't ask for any comfort or anything. You put down your gun to call an ambulance or...
Because they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care about our lives. And this is the problem. With the Murphy Bill, too, they don't care. They're putting stuff in there for more force that's really, in the long run, not going to even help. And no one is even going to monitor what they're saying, the force. Who's going to monitor that? You know, I just don't understand it. But anyway,
well, maybe the police need to be monitored. You know, I think that, and I don't know what the extent of the various police forces do, but... you know, police officers need to have some kind of psychological examination before they get on the force, and periodically.
Not that that could be trusted.
Go ahead. I didn't hear that, Lauren.
Sorry, what? I said not that that could be trusted. I mean, the whole, you know, psychiatry in a whole is, you know, a fraud. The whole thing is a fraud, and the brutality is horrifying, and the way that it's extending to groups of people who do not have any power currently or historically is just criminal, and our society needs to be held responsible for it. And I just don't know how people are so calm about it, because I want to just scream. So this idea of trying
agree.
To heal, but the brutality and the lies and the cover-ups and the continuation of it, you would think that every person who is in that level of authority, regardless of what they're called, psychiatrist, police, whatever, that knowing that this is going on, that they would be extremely, beyond cautious in every movement that they made to avoid anything like that ever happening again. And instead, there's a protest and justification for its use. And I think it is just absolutely heinous. And
that, people are angry, Lauren, and I'm angry too. I'm trying to be diplomatic on this call.
No, of course people are angry. I'm not suggesting my anger is somehow greater. But I mean, and people are out in the streets and they are putting their lives in the line to speak out in ways that I am very often, quite frankly, too afraid to be around large groups of police.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but I just want to... you know, underscore that. And I want to say that there are so many people online listening right now. And if you'd like to join in the conversation,
I would love for you to join in and hear
your one or star one. And if you want the number to call in, it's area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line for tonight, we have a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351.
The phones are lit up. And also just a tip, if some people may be in a situation where they don't have a phone, they're listening on a computer. If you're listening on a computer, and if your computer has a audio function, if you have a Gmail account, you go to Gmail, and you, on the left-hand side, if you go down to the bottom, there's a place that says make a call, and you can make a call using your Gmail. So that's
I want to say this, too. I mean, a lot of what's going on, like Black Lives Matter, I actually went to the case with Eric Garner and the Washington Square Park. And it wasn't just me as a black woman. We had other, you know, survivors going to that who have never gone to that and really was sick of it and wanted to go. But it can get, very violent with the protesters, which I don't agree with that either. You know, some of it's inciting them to have violence.
I don't think it's the protesters, Celia. I don't think it's
with
the protesters.
Oh, I didn't understand.
I think it's with the police.
Right, okay.
I think the police caused the violence. In a large, like that you're walking into a situation of where you feel like you must resist and you must protect because there's something coming at you that is trying to stop you. So it immediately puts people in a defensive position and creates a state power.
They have been trained to maintain control. So just like I said before, and just like Celia was saying, because I came from that era, I was demonstrating at a very young age, and we had training. And there's a difference between civil disobedience. Like I said, it's a different generation. The police, their whole culture is to maintain control at all times. And the justification is you resisted or you didn't do. Just like when they had the APA conference and Celia and Lauren, we were in New York a few years ago. I came to one of those, and we had to, stay off the sidewalk and whatever else.
And
I've done some stuff with Amnesty International. You have to do that because they are used to having maintaining control. So you just have to not follow a command. They tell you to get off that part of the sidewalk or whatever else, and that's all it is. They're like robots. They're like blind to that, and if their training is that way, so they'll have those big shields up. I don't know what's going to happen in Cincinnati, but that's what it is. It's part of their training that they have to have control at all times.
Okay, I agree with that, but some of this, Yvonne, is strictly about racism. Totally.
Oh yeah.
You can maintain control without killing someone 11 or 20 times. It's no reason for that. That's not a part of training.
It's overkill.
I just don't think it is.
There's a little boy that wrote a poem. Something about he was so happy that he had. I wouldn't say happy, but he was talking about his white boy privilege. I don't know if have you heard that?
No. Which one was this?
This was a young man. I think he was in New York, actually. He was going to a private school, and he wrote a poem. And he talked about his white boy privilege, and he was glad that he had his white boy privilege, and if he didn't have his white boy privilege, he didn't know what would happen to him. And this is affecting people that are not even of the targeted group.
Affecting everybody because let's understand this. Yes, there are African American men, African American women in families, but they're also in families that are non-black that have white mothers and white fathers. They're also affected. There's blended families now that no one seems to care about or think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you can take someone's life away, a father, a daughter, and that's okay. You know, so that's why there's an uprising going on. I'm really very afraid of it, but there's an uprising, and I'm hoping that we can find some solutions so no one else gets killed. I mean, that's what I'm praying for. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't even feel control of it. Next week something can happen. Who knows? But I do think we need to come up with some strategies. One of the things that I thought about, a longtime Mind Freedom member called me the other day and said, you know, she wanted me to talk to someone in the NAACP in Connecticut. And she linked us up together, but of course they said you needed to be a member. And I just thought about it. I'm not a member of NAACP. And, I mean, that's just one strategy. I'm not saying that's the entire thing everyone should be doing. But we should be in our communities talking about the Murphy's Bill, what that's going to happen for people of color and all people. It's going to be a disaster. And what the police are doing, the, you know, the brutality. And I'm sure they're working on it, but I think they need to hear from us. So I'm going to become a member shortly. It's $30 a year membership. You know, and I would advise other people in their communities if that's something. And then we could have a little bit more dialogue with people, because I think they see what's on TV about people labeled with a mental illness, and they're, automatically they're dangerous. There's no sympathy for any of us at all, no empathy at all, you know, and so they need to see us, you know, and I say this a lot, and we've been talking about this for a long time, but we really, I mean, it's not just us in our movement. We have our movement, but we need to expand and talk to these other organizations, because this could happen to their kids, you know, the ones that are undiagnosed. This could happen to them, you know?
Yeah, because it's a perception. It's a perception. And even... it's some things that need to happen within different communities, because I have heard, I remember when Mariah was shot on her way from the White House. That was a young lady, young mother who came to watch her. And I was saying to some people about that. And they said, oh, I thought that was mental illness. I said, I don't care if it was mental illness. She was alone in a car.
She probably was scared.
Yeah, because the person, see, they never tell you that the Secret Service person was plain clothes. Well, didn't have a uniform on. And somebody pulled a gun at you. And the way the streets are in Washington, you have no way to go but just one way. So,
I think that that's one way. Another way is that I would like to partner with Black Lives Matter. And I don't feel like, I mean, I feel that they're, by the media, shutting them down like they did other movements. And we just can't, you know, we don't have to agree with everything, but they have a right, you know, to rally in the protests. They do, you know. And I don't want to just say, oh, you know, they're inciting violence and that's why the police are killing us because of Black Lives Matter. That's another very argument that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no, the killings have been going on for, the killings have been going
on. Oh, yeah, I know,
for
I know, I know, I know.
Mm-hmm. So, but they can say it is the problem.
Right, exactly.
And that they can get away with it. Not just that they can say it. If they can say it, then they can get away with it. And get away with it.
Well, they said the same thing about Martin Luther King. They said they said the same thing that he was causing people to get hurt and damaged, and the SNCC, the whole movement. If you talk to older people, say that's the same the same thing that they were saying at that time is no less. And they were saying the same thing, just like people say, well, what about other internal shootings in the community? But this is kind of different. It's execution style. Because like I said, they are up to, they come in, it's almost like the police have gotten to the point where in some communities, it's like an invading force. And
they don't have a right to do that. Mm-hmm. It's very, very scary. First of all, I have a African-American young man, and every time he goes out, you know, if he goes out with his friends, I said, please be safe. if you're stopped by the police, just follow what they want you to say. I don't want my son to be killed. There's no solutions to this yet, so this is what I have to tell him. Oh, do you have your ID? Don't leave it at home. You have to bring. And I'm always relieved when he comes in the house.
Yeah, this is a thing that other people don't understand, that the fear that black parents have is that when you talk to your son or daughter, especially sons, is that you have that little, you have to sit down and what they call the talk. You have to have the talk, and, you know, we've been telling them, be a man and all this stuff, and then you're saying that the police stop you, do exactly what they tell you to do, you know, don't deviate, don't slow up, do everything that they're telling you, you know. If you're with someone else.
Al Sharpton, Reverend Al Sharpton with the National Action Network, they actually have a like a little leaflet, booklet, on how to respond if the police stops you.
NAACP does too.
Right, and I don't.
911.
Right. And so we have to have some tools, especially when they're killing survivors.
And the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance does have part of their advocacy training was what to do when the police arrive. That was part of it. Of course, Jaffe and all them teach people to turn the furniture over, so it looks like there was a violent situation that occurred.
Right. See, what I don't understand with Tori and Jaffe, and maybe it's just me thinking everybody's good, but, you know, you're promoting illness instead of wellness. I don't really, is that what you want the society to be, illness? And I've heard Jaffe say this at many meetings in New York City. Oh, that's so nice you're talking about wellness and recovery, but what about mental illness? I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me. I just don't get it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're still on the line, and if you want to call in, you can call in on our toll-free, on the call-in number will be 267-521-0167. Again, 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free number in the United States, call 855-346-3351, and we'll give it several times. There's lots of people on this call, but if you want to get in, press 1 or star 1. I can't remember which one it is. One of them is for cell phone, and the other one is for landline. But press 1 or star 1. If you've done it and you're not getting in, please do it again, because I've had people tell me that they just couldn't get in. But
We want to hear from you. We'd like to expand the conversation beyond me and Yvonne and Lauren. So it'd be great to hear from you.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people on the phone call, and there's more people on the internet. And as I said, if you have the internet and for some reason you don't have a phone, you can, if you can go to Google, you can use a Google Talk and make a call and call these numbers. Again, the number is 267-521-0167. Toll free is 855-346-3351. Okay.
We do have area code 802. Your line is open. You're live on the air.
Hello, this is Amy in Colorado. And I was hesitating to comment because I'm just so white.
No, please comment. Don't let that
survivor
stop you.
Too.
Hi, Amy.
Well, everybody.
Hi. I have really seen a big change since I moved to a really small town 3.5 years ago, going back to Denver once a month ever since. And I'd say in the last year, I've been stopped by an authority figure in Denver 5 times. And they say things to me like, "Can I help you, ma'am?" or you need help, or are you okay, even worse, you know, and which really scares me, because one wrong move and the whole thing can go south, you know, really fast. You know, and or you can misunderstand something, or, you know, it's just there's so many, too many ways for things to go wrong. And so twice I had the opportunity to ask the person later, why did you stop me? One time it was an ambulance driver, and I saw him later in the day in Denver, which was a miracle because there's, you know, millions of people there. And I said, why did you ding me earlier? He knew just exactly what I meant, and he said, well, because you looked and acted differently than all the people around you. And then the other guy was a bus transit security officer, and he and I were the only people around for as far as a human eye could see, so we just kept talking. And I asked him, why did he approach me and ask me that? And he said the same thing, because you are acting, you don't look like a person that lives here in Denver, and you are acting in a way that's different than how people usually act on the street, you know. So it's really scary. And I also know from being a transit driver myself and going through the training that there's a culture in the police, and also from being in jail. I've never been in prison, but I've been in jail a lot. And they don't care. They not only don't care about you, they hate you. You're just an animal to them. You know, they have no respect for you, and they don't care if you get hurt or if your feelings are hurt or if they lose your belongings or anything at all. And they're trained to think that way. And I think that it also folds in racism and classism and ableism. Because those kinds of ideas are also ingrained in the training. It's just the same way, you know, that medical school trains doctors to be arrogant. You know, there's these kind of subtext lessons that are delivered. Ways that are just so deeply ingrained that you try to address that by doing like a CIT training, you know, for two afternoons, and it's just not, you know, it's not going to make an impact, you know.
Right, and the person has to have empathy, has to have a heart, you know, and you can't train for that. You really can't.
Yeah, I think the systems would have to be upended to really achieve reform in criminal justice and in law enforcement. I don't know if it's possible to reform what we have now. It's so horribly reflective of the worst kinds of values, and it draws those people into those jobs also. You know, and then you have these power structures like in that Stanford experiment where they, you know, had half the students be guards and half the students be prisoners, and they had to shut the thing down after 3 days because the prisoners were being so horribly abused.
Oh,
so,
yes.
5 days. And
you know,
yeah, and Zimbardo's newer book, The Lucifer Effect, basically he was brought in as an expert witness for the person who exposed all of the violence at Abu Ghraib and the torture that the psychologists have since been confirmed that they were colluding with the Department of Defense, the American Psychological Association. So, yeah, the power structure here is, and the way that people who are typically
Well, Laura, maybe you should explain a little bit, because other people might not be aware of what you're talking about, you and Amy. Hello?
Well, in the
in terms
Stanford
of-
experiment...
You mean about the American Psychological Association colluding with the Department of Defense?
About the study that occurred and that it shut it down.
Oh, well,
and,
what Amy was referring to, but it, his later work, Zimbardo's later work, that the Stanford prison study predicted, the study that Amy brought up, that they took, you know, essentially they did, you know, supposed psychological testing of all of the potential people who were participating in the study so that they knew they had generally the same type of person. I'm getting a tremendous amount of feedback. And then they randomly assigned them either to be prison or guard, and within 5 days they had to shut down the study because people that they had picked because they had, you know, quote-unquote normative personality profiles were literally having, you know, what they called breakdowns in 36 hours because of the and the anonymity, the anonymity of the uniform, the power of the institution, going along with what had come out earlier in terms of conformity, the pressure to group conformity. People either conform because they believe that the group is really right and they must be wrong, or they know they're right but they don't want to cause any waves or anything, so they're just going to go along with it, right? And then that power, you know, the obedience to authority, that two-thirds of people will do whatever a perceived authority tells them to do, right? This is frightening about human nature in general, you know, and then you add these, you know, economics to it and geography and the actual physical built environments and the resources and the natural environment. I mean, you know, it just... This is the and then it gets justified. Then the media, they're all it's the whole thing. It's all. I mean, a systemic solution. There's got to be some kind of systemic solution, but it would be so entirely transformational as a society that, you know, people would lose so much money at the end of the day because it would require that the whole system was to change.
Yeah, and that
and sometimes.
I mean,
like, some of those things are, they seem really subtle, like a uniform, for example. You know, putting on a uniform and the anonymity that it gives you and the belonging to that group, you know. But that's a perfect example of like, how a very small change can affect a huge effect. That because one of the things that's happened with police and police activities in the United States is the feds started giving away all this military equipment to local police enforcement agencies. And so, you know, you get a bunch of young men going to a locker room in the morning and putting on this clothing that makes them look like some kind of awful insect with weapons, you know, and then expect them to behave respectfully and with empathy to the people that they come in contact with during the day. They aren't going to, you know. They're going to behave like how they look, which is scary and aggressive and violent and frightening. So I think Lauren is exactly right on. It's like the disruption that would have to occur to change anything in any kind of significant way in this system would go so deep and would reach out in so many different areas that
it needs to happen, Amy, because what we have
I live in a town with no law, and I'll tell you what happens here: the women are the enforcers. Here, if some guy abuses a little kid here, the women round themselves up with, you know, their goods, their rifles or their, you know, baseball bats or whatever they have, and they go and beat the shit out of the guy, you know, and then he doesn't do it again. And nobody calls the sheriff and nobody gets child protection involved, and the child stays with the family, which as it should be. You know, and so here you have a town.
Community policing.
No police. We don't need. And nobody even thinks to call them. We don't need to.
And that's what I was thinking about earlier the other day is we're so used to, especially in New York, even on voicemail, okay, if you're in an emergency, call 911. Everyone is programmed to call 911. And sometimes you don't have to call 911. Why is everybody thinking we're giving them authority? We need you to come. You don't always have to call them. But everyone's conditioned
behavioral
to call 911.
Mental health use them as an out, you know. You know, it would be great if all these places had mobile crisis teams. We have mobile crisis teams, but if they are not available, they will send the police. And
right,
their training is different. Even like the semblance of CIT training that people may have, I don't even think that that's enough, because it just gives them enough so they can identify us.
Well, what I'm saying is, I agree with you, Yvonne. I'm saying that we as a society have to figure out other ways to deal with crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't always have to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to think of other strategies.
Yeah, and we need to help the families, too, because some people, they have been, I don't know if they've been acculturated to what they think is, it's very authoritarian hierarchy. I mean, they think, well, a doctor told them to do this, a social worker told them, well, if you have an emergency, to call us, and then they call us, and they get the 911. They don't respect, not everybody, but some of them don't respect the lived experience of other people who have been through this. You know, when if you have someone that, you know, some people are serially getting in crisis. And it's a different situation when you have a grown-up adult living with parents. It's different than you have an adolescent. So you know you have this, you know, some of these family members need to be coming to peer organizations and asking for help before they have a crisis to be ended.
But they can't do that if they don't know we exist. But what I'm saying is the existing organizations that have been around forever, like NAACP, we have to go there, be a part of their meetings, and tell them, yes, peer-run services or alternatives exist. You know, yes, I've been through the system, and here's what happened to me. I was forced. You know, they don't know. We think we know. You know, I remember when we had the APA protest in New York, and there was a woman that passed me, and I think it was Dorothy, or someone was speaking about shock treatment, and she says, oh, they still do that? Oh, my God. So they're not aware of what we're aware of, you know?
Well, they think it's all good when
No, she didn't think it was good. She thought that was, like, you know, primitive. How could they still be doing shock? She didn't know they're still doing it because they're not exposed to that. Mm-hmm.
And right, and people become horrified the same way I think that when people see the police brutality, they become horrified in seeing it, and that's why the video is changing the conversation and broadening the conversation. And beyond the immediate places where it's happening, people are learning about it.
Also, like you said, go to NAACP, but as I said,
I mean, this is just one solution. I'm not suggesting
We have to partner with other people, and they have to, and they don't have to, but I would like us to educate them so they could see that that we have there are so many commonalities and that we're marching toward. I mean, this is why the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s was successful, because they had, you know, all different types of groups that were involved, you know, in these things.
Right.
And we have to get people.
And we have to start doing that now, because all of us know all of the issues all the time, and we support each other and we fight for human rights. But these other organizations, I'm just giving you NAACP as one of them, don't
ACLU.
Even know we exist. They don't know the peer-run services alternatives, or they have no clue. So what are they going to do if something happens to their loved one? They're going to call 911.
Yeah. Or the other family organizations.
Because there are two categories, right? APA protest of the Peanuts cartoon, either fooled or complicit right?
Yeah.
So there are plenty, for as many people as there are who are complicit, there are many people who are still just fooled, and they don't know. And so, yeah, I think any which way that people can go, and Celia and others who can, if you can do that and make those connections and let them know.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do it. I feel like I feel like I'm in a place now in my life that I could do that. I didn't feel like that before, but I think it's all over. It's not just us. It will be them, okay?
And,
it can be them.
And I wanted to say something because Amy had said this before. She said she just felt so white. Well, the NAACP has always been a multiracial group, has always been. So it is not something that that only has people of color or black people. It has always been a multi-open group. So that's something that's not new. I was a junior NAACP person as a child, but they've always been open. It is not something that is closed off, and they are welcoming of people from all backgrounds, even people that are Euro American. So I just wanted
Lauren,
to
Lauren, do we have another call?
Yes.
Can you?
I'm bringing in area code 802. Your line is open. You're live on the air. 802, are you there?
Hey, everybody. This is Sarah from Colorado. Thanks so much for the show and for really the great thoughts and ideas. One of the things that strikes me that I puzzle over, that I don't have solutions for, but that I think is necessary, I think a lot of the motivation that people have, and I could be wrong, but a lot of the motivation that people have on both sides, really, when they become police officers or law enforcement, or you know, that people are sort of drawn to the idea of, you know, putting their lives on the line for there's a lot of community spirit, you know, putting their lives on the line for the betterment of the community. And in a culture that's essentially violent and that essentially sees, you know, putting your life on the line in terms of, like, you have bigger toys so you blow away the opposition, that ends up being a sort of a power dominance kind of model. But potentially that model could be changed. I mean, the idea of putting we could go at what it means to put your life on the line, and putting your life on the line could become something like trying to communicate or trying to be there for someone even though you're putting your safety at risk, and trying to show love and compassion even though your safety's at risk. And trying to, I mean, we could actually, you know, to the extent that people are drawn to higher values, and many people are, we could change the definition. We could really work to change the definition of community service, in a way that's really, in many ways, the
reason that Dr. King's message and the reason the civil rights movement spoke in the first place. Was because what appealed to people, or at least part of it, at least what appealed to me, maybe, was the idea that, you know, people were standing up against violence, and there was a higher value than violence.
What's your name again, hon? This is Celia.
My name's Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. My understanding, and, you know, some of my family members, my aunt, my grandmother, my mom, my father, I've heard so many stories from them on civil rights. The nonviolence that Martin Luther King did was actually a strategy. And they had strategy sessions. They went to Highlander with Rosa Parks and other people to discuss this. This was a very difficult thing to have police dogs on you, to be
at
a lunch counter and you're going to be spit at because they don't want to serve you. It stored so much anger in people of color but they still work together, got the support, so they continue this movement. And I agree. I think that police need compassion. But right now, I don't see it happening, and I agree there needs to be a new message out there, and it may have to come from us, basically.
See, what I think what I'm saying, and this is what gives me hope. A lot of shit doesn't give me hope, but this is what gives me hope is the fact that I think the reason the civil rights movement won, and I think the reason that things like many people's self-determination movements won. I think the reason that gay rights actually won was because people saw a higher value. I mean, people saw a higher value than discrimination. People saw something that there was a way that we stood for the best that humanity can be, which is in many ways that putting your life on the line for something. For something that has to do with human, with, you know, not only just family but really human family. That's something that has to do with a higher good, and that violence and that the highest good, if power were the highest good, the civil rights movement never would have won out. If power were the highest good, we would not have gay marriage. The thing that what mattered was that people went into the hospitals and risked getting AIDS, and to care for each other, and people saw a vision of family. As long as the gay movement was all about irresponsible sex, our right to be whoever we want to be in any way we want to be sexual, that was never going to win. It was only when we became about family, and about people standing up for what they loved and cared about, that we gained the respect of the rest of humanity. And I think that the idea is that if it's a human race, we're ever going to get over this thing of power and privilege. We're sort of fighting to earn each other's respect as human beings. And the same thing, you know. As long as the mental health movement is just about like our right to be as like non-functional as we want to be, we're never going to win, you know, or our right to be as emotional as we want to be. We're not going to win the respect of the human family. It's when we stand with people and insist on respect, no matter across alternate realities, and insist on treating people with respect and dignity, no matter what they think about the nature of what's real.
I agree with you. I think we have to stand on that, what you just said. But the other coin of this is that there's so much power struggle. There's institutional racism. There's coercion that happens in the mental health system that we didn't create.
Yeah.
And yes, we want to have compassion, but we want human rights. We want to be respected and valued. I agree with that. But some of these things are so ingrained in the culture, in society, and it's not easy to change it, but we're working towards it, you know.
I agree. I don't think we're saying anything different. I'm wanting to align with you, not oppose you. I just am.
Oh yeah, I'm not opposing you.
Puzzle,
I'm just giving you an opinion.
What I puzzle over is how can we make it more attractive? How can we change the discourse? How can we change the discourse so that we're actually getting everybody to focus on a higher value that I think in the end appeals to a lot of people, that there is a higher value than violence, that there is a higher value than power. And so much
every human being is worth something. What I hear Celia saying and what I hear too is when a police officer approaches a person, whether they're a person of color or a person they perceive that they have a mental health issue, that person is discounted already, simply because, in other words, there's a fear. The reason why Celia, myself, and other women have this fear about their young people going out is because they're not going to do anything. In other words, you don't have to be doing anything. You already, just by your mere existence, that you're going to have a higher risk for the police to stop and to kill you. You know, you don't have the same thing for a person who has, if the police come to your house and they're coming there because there's a domestic event, or whether they're coming there and it's an event that's supposed to be a mental health wellness check. The person who's getting the mental health wellness check has a higher, they're at higher risk of being killed. And so you have to put a value.
I feel like we're missing each other, and I feel like you're. I'm wondering. I'm worried that I'm saying something in a way.
No, I don't.
Know,
I think
making...
what you're saying, Sarah. I agree with. I think what's happening is I just been going through this like all my life, and I'm a very good person, and I support people,
gotcha.
You know. I do all of this, but then I also feel violated as well, and I'm trying to work that through. And so, I hear it. I agree with it. I like to bring people together, but I just feel under siege. I feel like my son, who I said earlier, is 20. And, you know, he has to be cautious when he goes to play. He can't just walk in any place. And it's because he's under siege. He's an African-American man. And so there's so many different issues. So I don't want you to feel I don't agree. I'm just, this is where my reality is. This is what I live. And
yeah.
I want to tell him that you respect people and value people and have compassion, and he does. But because he's a black man, I don't want him to just suddenly be killed because of that. He did nothing.
Oh, God, no.
This is what we're talking about with the other cases that we were talking about earlier. That's what's happening. That's so scary. I want compassion.
My thought is not so much. What I'm trying to think of is how we can shift the values of the dominant culture. I don't think those of us who are under siege need to be trying any harder. I think part of the challenge is to make it more attractive for the dominant culture to think in terms of what's it like to risk your life. Instead of putting your life on the line so you can beat somebody up, putting your life on the line so that you can like connect with another human being. And so,
well, I think what you're saying, Sarah, you can
change that ethic.
Right, but I think that we all have the responsibility. Or you may be able to talk to people in your culture and talk about this, have a discussion. I mean, for me, I don't know what to do about that. You know,
yeah.
I just can't deal with it. I'm too hurt about it,
yeah.
You know, and I don't have the solution for that piece. I think all of us need to talk to our friends, our comrades, our neighbors, and talk to them, because that's who the world is, you know, who we are.
Yeah.
You know, I have these family discussions, you know, I used to have them a lot when my dad was alive, and we talk about these things, and so discussions need to happen. I don't have to be there for the discussion, but it needs to happen in all communities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there another call in, Lauren,
there are quite a lot of people online. I want to encourage people to, again, press either 1 or *1. And if you'd like to call in, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free number, you can try 855-346-3351. And again, if you've been online listening and you want to join the show, just be sure to press 1 or star 1. And even if you've done it, do it again, because sometimes I miss it.
I just want to make an announcement. If anyone out there wants to join a local chapter of NAACP, you can go to donate.naacp.org, O-R-G, if you want to do that.
Nice.
And Yvonne, I wanted to ask before you were indicating in terms of human rights and international pressure, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, international pressure usually has to be applied, even if you go back. I know people want to talk about the civil rights movement, but it really was because there was all this press around the world. All around the world, there was press because they saw black little children being bit by dogs during protests. And that's what caused, you know, the same thing in South Africa. So I remember this, I think it was last week, the Chinese, the United States was talking to them about their human rights violations. And the Chinese said, well, you can't talk to us about any human rights violations because you've got your own going on. So, there are several different committees of the United Nations. There's a committee to eliminate racial discrimination. There's a committee on torture. I know that Celia is, you know, very familiar with it.
Right, and Tina Minkowicz is a part of that too.
I'm quite sure these sound bites are traveling all over the world. I mean, France, Southeast Asia, everybody's seeing these images. And, of course, international news, whether it's, people just think it's CNO news, CNN, but France 24, RTTV, people sometimes I like to check in with foreign media to see what they're saying about the U.S. So even if you don't have cable, I will go to RT.com, Russian Times TV, or go to France24.com, and you actually can see their TV programs online. But the international pressure is the thing that U.S. will pay attention to. Now, the U.S. gets reviewed every couple of years, and the U.S. has not signed the committee to the treaty, I don't believe, unless it's happened recently, the treaty to eliminate racial discrimination. But that those kind of pressures need to be applied. And also, if you have a police review board, and some states or communities, you may have the ability to serve on a review panel when there's police misconduct. It, you know, that varies from place to place. I tried to get on one in Washington, but they have a heightened weight restriction, so I couldn't get on it. It's almost like they made it so you had to be have that heightened weight like a police officer. But I would check that, too, because, like I said, these things have been going on for a while. It is very rare that the person who does it is going to get any justice. We're still having the case with Freddie Gray in Baltimore, this nearby city to me. But there's there's that going on. And sometime I'd like to play the little poem that the young boy wrote. It might not be appropriate tonight, but those are kind of pressures can be applied because right now things are in motion. They will never be held accountable because their training and the procedures are set up so that the police are given the benefit of the doubt. They get the best.
Well, Yvonne, again, I'm just, I understand it. but I think it has to change, or more people are going to be killed. They're not going to be held accountable. And then there's going to be more, because people are sick and tired from both races. And we're tired of it enough. And there's going to be, and my fear is more of this uprising of violence.
Mm-hmm.
So training is great. You know, I know that this is how they've been trained. But you can't just kill us. Our lives do matter. You just cannot keep doing this.
No, no, I agree 100%. But I'm just saying that that's how they get off.
Change. It needs to change. And I'm really disappointed in the federal government, you know, our state and local, that see this happening and want to do a cover-up. They don't want to take responsibility at all.
It's systematic. That's why you have... That's why processes and procedures have to be changed, because it's not like someone was saying to me, well, you know, these people, they have their minds have to be changed. I said, their minds don't have to be changed because it's systematic. So it's just set up from the very beginning that no matter what happens, even if there's film involved, that, you know, they'll go through this process. The police unions will lawyer up with them. And they will be fine. I mean, look at Rodney King. How many years has he been? And they had him being used as a baseball with them hitting him with bats.
And they had no right to do that. That was excessive force that they didn't need to do. You know, that was not. I mean, that was horrible. Watching that on television, I remember it.
They had a trial, and what they say is. They were successful in painting him as sort of like a guerrilla person that needed that force. So, you know, Sarah had said something about, and you were talking about how people are viewed. And, you know, Tamir Reese was 12 years old, and they just pulled up and they blew him away. I mean, they didn't.
Right, and what were they afraid of? A child? Something is wrong with them that they're afraid. You're supposed to be, you know, you're the one that has the gun and the power, but you're afraid of a child, a 12-year-old child? That just doesn't make any sense.
But you have to go back to also how these things happen. Someone got upset because they said someone was out there and they said they were shooting. And that's what, when the police
got
the call,
they should have got out of the car and investigated.
No, I'm not justifying it. I'm telling you that they're programmed this way. And they have to see us as human beings.
Right.
They're programmed. I'm not saying it's right. I'm telling you how they get up there and then how they get off is that, you know, and the gun did not have the usual orange thing on it. Same thing with Trayvon Martin. I'm not justifying it. I'm saying...
I'm not saying you're justifying it. I'm just angry with it.
Are going to be angry with it, and something's got to be done because everybody is not as strategic as maybe you and I, and they won't wait, just like the guy in Dallas. We had, just shortly after that shooting, a day after, we had two shootings here where we had people to shoot at police officers. We rarely have that to happen.
Yeah.
Where unless somebody, you know, unless they're shooting back, but going through a tunnel, they shot at some police car and they had closed down the Capitol. Two on the same day. So, you know, everybody doesn't value their own life and they're angry and they don't necessarily think. So,
is there any other calls you want to repeat the call-in number?
Yes, the call-in number is 267-521-0167. 267-521-0167. And,
Are there any calls, Lauren?
There are quite
yeah,
a lot
of people.
There are people online. I want to encourage people to press either 1 or star 1 if you want to join in the conversation. And I just have to, again, say we have to end this police brutality, the ability for the police to kill and without any consequence get away with killing people. This is horrendous. And I want to thank, again, Yvonne and Celia both for doing this tonight and for bringing attention to this really important issue that I hope that we all continue to work to end.
So can you give us the number again of the address for the NAACP?
Okay, let me get back there. It's, 1 second.
It's www.donate.naacp.org.
Right. And we're also having a conference call to continue this conversation on Sunday, July 17th at 3 p.m. Eastern. And I need to find that number. Does anyone have that handy? I'll have to find it.
But we'll tweet it out and Facebook it out.
People,
if you can.
Yeah, it's the number 605-475-2090. And there's a PIN code, but I'll give you the number again. It's 605-475-2090. This is on Sunday, the 17th at 3 p.m. Eastern. And the PIN code is 873-270. That's 873-270. And you can go to the public group, Surviving Race, the intersection of injustice, disability, and human rights on Facebook.
Thank you so much, Lauren and Yvonne and Amy. And Sarah and all the other people who are listening in.
Julie,
hi, Julie.
And if you want to share, and just one thing you want to say, if you want to share this, if you have other people that you know, you can share the site, because this is archived, so that you can share it. Many more people listen to it as an archive show versus listening to it live. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great night. I appreciate everything that you did.